Now, one time in Vancouver, I was at a little dinner party, and I got chatting with one of the other people at the dinner party who I just met for the first time. Conversation moved along. We talked about, you know, where I lived and where she had lived. Long story short, it turned out that for about 4 months, she had lived in the apartment right next door to mine in the building. As far as I knew, this was the first time she and I had ever met at a dinner party across town. And, you know, in some ways, it wasn't even all that surprising. It was just kind of Vancouver life. There's a real sense of disconnectedness that happens when you live in an urban environment, feelings of alienation and isolation. And those kind of feelings are the driving force behind a growing movement, co-housing. People who are getting into co-housing are giving up a little bit of their independence to gain a sense of community. And here to explain, two women living in co-housing communities in British Columbia. Renee Matthew is a co-housing consultant. She lives in one of the projects that she helped develop called Cranberry Commons. And Valerie McIntyre lives in Windsong. It's a co-housing community in Langley, BC, and she's been there since it opened in 1996. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Renee, start by telling us what co-housing is exactly.
Co-housing is a lifestyle rather than a legal model or a type of housing. It's a development that where the people who want to live in the community agree that they want to have more connection with their neighbors than what is standard in conventional housing. So co-housing typically develops where a group of people decide they want to have this style, and the architectural style of it is set up to allow for more spontaneous connection with neighbors, where in conventional development it's designed to have as much privacy as possible. Co-housing is designed so that you can connect easily with your neighbors, and typically or always there is extensive common amenities that are associated with it, with which include a kitchen and dining area. And even though the homes themselves are completely self-contained, they have their own kitchen and dining area. Co-housing model is set up so that people can choose to have meals together on a regular basis, which helps to bond the people in many ways. So typically the ownership model is like it's a regular strata or condominium type ownership form. And it's really just set up so that you can spend more time together in those.
The first thing that comes to mind that must be difficult is when you get into a situation like that, how do you know you're going to like the other people that you're involved with?
You don't. And you don't necessarily have to. That's not the idea. It has more of a similarity to family. Like you don't necessarily like your family.
You don't choose them.
You don't choose them. And there's something about it, too, that when there is a need for help, it's like family. You know you can depend on your neighbors to help you out there. There's an interdependence that is created in this kind of model that isn't available in other types of living arrangements.
Valerie, you live in a place very much like this in
Langley. Yes, it's the Windsong co-housing community, and we opened our doors 12 years ago this summer, 1996.
Wow, 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been in the same place the whole time?
Or? Yes, we have. Yeah, my husband and I moved in with our three older kids. Our youngest daughter was in grade 10 at that point.
Oh, how did she like it?
She loved it, actually. Well, we'd already been commuting from our previous home in Coquitlam out to Fort Langley. She was going to the Langley Fine Arts School, so she was really happy to be moving out to Langley, closer to her friends. For the older two, it was a bit of a different story. They were kind of following along because they weren't quite ready to leave the nest yet, and they had to come along with their parents.
And did they like it eventually?
I wouldn't say that they bonded with it in the same way that their parents did or that the younger kids do. I think for children being born into the community or arriving when they're really young, it's a fabulous experience. Of course, when you try to bring older kids in, especially teenagers, they've got their own group of friends and they're not so interested in meeting all their parents' friends, and it's not really their thing. But for youngsters, you know, like co-housing is a multi-generational model, so we have everyone from newborns to the elderly. And the kids in our community are just like a tribe of cousins, you know. So they, for example, they don't keep to just their own age level playmates as they would in school. In co-housing, they all kind of hang out together.
So it's actually, you know, at first you would almost think it's like a little small town in one building, but but it's, it sounds like it's even more than that. It's more like an extended family, is that right?
Well, I wouldn't quite say it's like extended family. My husband says it's kind of like summer camp. You know, you go there and everybody's in all these cabins and you enjoy each other's company and you get together for barbecues or potluck dinners or whatever. And but then you're there for 12 years. Just gets better and better.
And you get really good at sailing and tying knots.
Yes, and solving conflicts.
I guess you have to be a certain kind of person. Or is it, do you think
well,
that's true?
Yes, I do think it's true, actually. I think, you know, there are people who really strongly desire independence and want to be in their own house with a lot of property around so they can blare their radios on the weekends or have loud parties and whatever it is they do when they get drunk and so on. But in co-housing, it really, co-housing attracts people who perhaps have thought quite deeply about their values in life. They really value the sense of community. They perhaps are missing a large family network that they know that their parents or their grandparents had, and they're looking to replace that in some way. So co-housing attracts a certain kind of people who really value being close to their neighbors, and they're actually, they come into the community looking for a close relationship with their neighbors. They're not looking for extreme independence.
And I imagine, Renee, I'll throw this at you as well. I imagine that, you know, a person who is given to irresponsibility and not pulling their load, it's just not going to work, is it?
It doesn't really. People, we don't have any required tasks that people do in the community, but if nobody did any of the tasks, then none of them would get done. So we try to keep a free flow going, but yeah, and typically everybody does do something. Everybody contributes. You know, I just want to add to something that Valerie said because I'm a little bit not in agreement. Because I know for myself, when I made the decision to move into co-housing, I was actually terrified about the lack of privacy that potentially would be there for me. And I'm not a particularly social person. I moved there more than anything to put my money where my mouth was because I believe it's a more sustainable lifestyle choice. Typically, co-housing has more green building included, and the whole way that people behave in co-housing is more sustainable in terms of the composting and the ability to share cars and that sort of thing. So that's what really drew me, and the social aspect of it, I believe, is also more sustainable too. But I came from, you know, nuclear family with the backyard and big house in suburbia, and the idea of moving in to a neighborhood where I was expected to have more contact with my neighbors, I thought, my God, am I going to be able to stand this? And what I have found is that I actually have more privacy. It's a paradox. My neighbors all know me, but I have more privacy than I do in a regular strata where people don't even know me, because there's a respect for who I am and what I do because they know me, that I don't get in a situation where people don't know me. So, you know, going back to your initial question about, you know, whether irresponsible people can do well in co-housing. I mean, we had a situation where there was a couple who we share a guest room where they didn't clean up after themselves. Mm-hmm. And as a community, we had to take steps to create consequences for them to become responsible, because we couldn't afford to have that kind of behavior in the community. So you learn skills of dealing with differences and basically managing relationships with people that will work for the majority.
So what happened? I mean, they're not cleaning up the guest room after they use it. You have to learn to deal with that and have consequences what were they?
We took away their privileges of using the guest room for a period of time and basically created guidelines that said that this is how you have to behave in order to have the right to use that.
Didn't they feel like they were being ganged up on by the...
No, they didn't. It's amazing the, you know, when everybody, they could see that this was an issue. Hmm. And one of the things that we agree to do in co-housing is to talk to each other directly.
Right.
We don't have a strata council that we go to with our complaints. The person who has the issue has to talk to the person who they have an issue with directly. And that actually creates a whole different dynamic than other situations.
I guess so. But, I mean, in a situation like that one where you've got somebody not cleaning up the guest room, who, I mean...
But we care and like these people. See, that's the thing. Care for and like these people.
Right.
They don't clean up the guest room, but they're our neighbors, and there's other things about them that we love about them.
But I'm also thinking about the fact that who gets deputized to go and make the complaint? I mean, isn't everybody pointing at everybody else saying, you go tell them, you go tell them?
Oh, no, no. We have regular meetings,
right.
You know, a couple times a month. And when there's issues in the community, it comes up in the community. And as a community, we deal with the issue. So they were there at the meeting. We were all there at the meeting. We all talked about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole idea of community and how we live. I mean, I'm like you, Renee. I like to be social when it's time to be social, and then I run home and close the door. You know, have a relationship with cable. but the thing is, I still find the idea of having a community an attractive idea, you know, and it's a tough balance, though. I mean, why do you think it is that that the emphasis has gotten so far away from community and on to privacy and individual lives in the urban environment?
You know, I think partly the design, the pattern of development has actually supported that.
Mm.
When you don't know something, you often will fear it. And we end up having so little contact with people other than, you know, our immediate friends and family these days that we start to fear everybody else as strangers and different. We also don't learn skills of how to deal with differences when we don't have to. So living in co-housing forces us to learn skills. And what we find is that we're actually natural. We're good at it. We couldn't have survived as a species if we didn't learn to work together, because we're pretty tasty. And we had to learn how to work together to fight off the beasts. So that's a natural, you know, human tendency that we've kind of forgotten about.
I try to keep myself scrawny. unappealing to wild animals. I'm just be irresponsible here and throw at a, you know, a worst case scenario thing, but it is from my own recent experience. In my apartment building, one night I was there and the buzzer rang and it was the police. And they said, don't worry, we haven't come for you. Not this time, anyway. But we just want to get into the building and visit one of your neighbors. They didn't want to startle him. So, sure enough, of course, I was peeking out the door like a good neighbor. And the police came in and went down and visited the guy down the hall. Now, this was not a surprise, because a lot of people on our floor knew the guy down the hall. The poor man had a lot of problems. He was apparently a crack addict, and he also had, you know, psychological problems that had seen him hospitalized. He had a habit of standing in the doorway naked, observing other people in the building.
Oh, dear.
He was, you know, in short, not the kind of neighbor you want to have. So how does co-housing handle that? I mean, do they just have a screening system so a person like that doesn't get in to begin with? I guess co-housing set up to deal with individuals who are genuinely troubled?
It's not set up to deal with individuals that are troubled, although the support of people can help when troubles are there in a way that is much more challenging in an isolated community. We tend not to attract people who are really troubled to co-housing, because we have a whole process before people buy in where they have to be educated about what it is that they're buying into. So people have to be attracted to the concept. And typically, people who are really troubled are not attracted to the idea of living in a community where everybody knows each other, because they can't have the behaviors that they have in an isolated situation, or don't believe that they can. So we actually haven't had anyone in our community, I've been living there since 2001, that has had problems that have been impossible for us to deal with. There are always problems. We're humans, right. And there's always things. But we find ways as a community to work through the issues and come to ways of working it. So what do you do about these people that are troubled? They're not living in co-housing. Could we handle them living in co-housing? Probably better than in the current, you know, isolated communities that we have.
What's it like, Valerie, when, I mean, people, it's great, people know you. What happens when you're having one of those days when you don't want anybody to know you?
I close my blinds.
you have to leave the apartment. Do you ever have those days where you leave the apartment and you just wish you didn't know anybody?
It's just not a problem. I mean, everybody has those days, right? So quite often, but occasionally it does happen where you'll meet somebody and say, good morning, how are you? And they go, fine, keep going, you know. Yeah, yeah. So it's just the way people are. We get used to it and we accept it because we know each other well.
Do you ever regret it, Renee? Do you ever have days when you feel like, I wish I lived somewhere where nobody knew my name?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. There's days when I find my neighbors really irritating, and I wish that I lived in a single-family house out in suburbia somewhere with a big fence and a dog, you know.
Where nobody knows
your
name. Yeah,
exactly. There definitely are times, but the vast majority, the times when I do like it, make up for the times that I don't, like, hugely. I can't imagine, actually, now living any other way. Mm. Now that I've lived like this, and you tend to have that happen where people will move from one co-housing community to another after they've lived in that kind of environment. It's becoming very popular. As a co-housing development consultant, I've noticed in the last 12 years that our ability to fill units has completely changed. We have waiting lists in all of our communities.
How popular is it becoming? I mean, how many co-housing developments are there now?
There's not that many because it's the development process is very challenging, so it's very difficult for these to get built. And we need to try to find ways to make it easier, but it's just there's just not that many happening, not because of the desire, but because of the red tape and bureaucracy and the challenges for financing and legal, for buying the land, for getting that all underway. And so what happens is the communities that are built and the ones that are under development that are actually happening are finding that there's people. It's a global attraction. The project that just finished in Courtney, there were people from the United States, people from Europe, that bought into that particular project. So
and these things have to be kind of purpose-built, don't they? You couldn't just grab an apartment building and turn it into one of these things.
No, because apartment buildings are designed so that people will have minimal contact with each other. The actual physical structure of co-housing is designed so that it allows for spontaneous connection. So there's a whole intentionality in the actual architecture.
Yeah, and Valerie, you'd recommend it? I mean, do you think your kids are going to, you know, move on and find co-housing situations of their own?
Oh, it's quite possible. Actually, our youngest daughter is back home with us from living in Europe now for a month, and she's having a whole renewal of appreciation for the co-housing community now that she sees it from the perspective of a young mother and an adult who's thinking more about housing than she was when she was a teenager. It's a fabulous way to live. It's very rich. It's very rich in personal relationships. It's rich in growth opportunities and learning how to get along better. That was one of my major reasons for getting involved in co-housing, is that I'm really interested in world peace, and I was really attracted to the idea of just figuring out how people could live closely together and get along with harmonious relationships.
Thank you both for coming in. Renee Matthew, a co-housing consultant, lives in one of the projects that she helped to develop, and Valerie McIntyre has lived in Windsong, a co-housing community in Langley, for over 10 years.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.